First kasha, the beginning of the Yigash, straight through to the revelation of Yosef to his brothers, is replete with Yehuda saying again and again, "My father, my father, my father! If you don't let us bring Binyamin back, my father is going to die of sorrow. We had to convince him to send Binyamin down, even though he's the only son left from his mother, Rachel, who was so precious to him, and she died at a very young age. My father, my father, my father." Right? So what does Yosef say? Yosef says, "I'm Yosef. Is my father still alive?" What do you mean, is my father still alive? You know your father's still alive, because that's all we've been talking about. Right? Pretty obvious kasha. That's number one. Another kasha. Gam dar teke be'is b'yosem pam shengu mitzrayim sholem ha'sholem avichem ha'zokin she'amartem odenu chai ve'mishivu lo ki hu chai. If you go back to last week's parsha, when the brothers come down for the second time, and they meet Yosef, they go to his house, and he serves them a meal, and he has his special cup, right? And that's how he frames them later. That's how Parshas Miketz ends. So when he greets them, he says, "Oh, how's the old man doing? The father you spoke about last time you guys were here, that you said was back at home with the other son, how's he doing?" And they said, "He's doing fine. He's alive," right? And they haven't gone home yet, right? They barely left the city when they were tracked down by Yosef's messengers and brought back. So they don't know how he's doing. So whatever they told him before is, as far as they're concerned, the most updated information. They haven't left since they came. So how could he possibly ask again, "How is my father doing? How is your father doing?" But Yosef, another kasha, if in fact, we're understanding the pasuk pshat on the pasuk, hod avichai, right? So what would you expect to come shortly thereafter from the brothers in the conversation? In response, "Yes, he's alive, Baruch Hashem. Hey, you know, Mr. King, we told you that a little while ago, right?" So A, he asked him a question which you already knew the answer to. Number two, they actually answered him earlier. And number three, whatever he means to be asking now, they never answer him. So the whole Ha'od Avichai is very hard to understand. That's the first problem. Second problem is that there's a Medrash commenting on this pasuk. It goes as follows. Medrash Rabbi Yisrael pasuk zeh Amar Abba Kohen Bardala. Oy lonu miyom adin, oy lonu miyom atochecha. Rabbi Abba Kohen Bardala would lament, "Woe is to us on the day of judgment. Woe is to us on the day of Musar." Tochecha is Musar, right? Hocheach, tochech, es amisecha. It's a mitzvah in the Torah. The person has to give Musar. Yosef katan shal shvatem lo yach lo achel lan ososo ki nevam mipanav l'chshiyav ha-kosh baruch v'yochich lo ha-echel l'fi ma shehu shenema ochicha v'erecha l'aynecha al-achas kam v'kam. What was the woe is to us? Rabbi Abba Kohen Bardala says, look at Yosef. Yosef is here, he's the youngest of the brothers, almost the youngest of the brothers, right? And he gives them this musar and they can't even respond, right? Pasuk says, they were so taken aback they couldn't even answer. Woe is to us, how much more so, Kal v'chomer, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives us Musar in the end of our life, in the end of days, how much more so are we going to be unable to respond? For Dibu Rabin, many Mepharshim have already tried to explain, Levar Zeh HaMedrash Kohen, what is this Medrash talking about? Gam Yishol Havin, Ma Tochach Hashayi Kal HaShvatim. Look at the Pasuk. What Musar did Yosef give? Did Yosef ever say, "Shame on you guys for selling me"? Did he ever say, "Why are you guys giving me this whole story?" You know, and what's that? The opposite. He brings them in and he gives them a hug and he tells them, "Oh, come on, you know, it wasn't really your fault. And Hashem wanted me to come down to Mitzrayim. And he did this all as a master plan to so that I can provide for you and I can take care of you and take care of my father in his old age." Right? So where is the Musar? I get it. If he had given the Musar, so then Abba Kohen Bardala is saying, "Oy, you know, if this little brother can give such powerful Musar, you can't even answer, how much more so is Hashem going to have Musar from?" But that's what happened. Next sentence, V'gam Yishlohavin Masha Chilak HaMedrash Roshayim V'amar Oy Lanu Miyom HaDin Oy Lanu Miyom HaTochecha Mahu Din U'mahu Tochecha. This is a Roshnal Shir Diyak, right? What does it mean when he says Oy Lanu Miyom HaDin Oy Lanu Miyom HaTochecha? Is he repeating himself? No, if he says Din, so Din gets a fist and Tochecha gets a fist, you know, it's not just a poetic license. Woe is to us of the day of judgment, woe is to us of the day of rebuke. No, there's Din and there's rebuke. We have to understand what each one of those is referring to. What's this flowery lashon that keeps going on and on when Hashem gives us rebuke for each and every person? According to him, why couldn't it just say, oh boy, we're in trouble. We get to Shemayim, and we have some avers that Hashem is going to call us out on. Right? So, lots of kashas over here, we'll say. First kasha is, what's his question? He already knew that Yaakov is alive because we've been talking about it. Second question is, they answered him earlier. Third question was, they never actually answered him this time around. And the fourth kasha is, what is this medrash all about? Where is the tochacha? Where is the din? What's the difference between those two? And what's this long description of what Hashem is going to judge us with in the future? A whole new pshat in the pasuk. Your kindergarten pshat in the pasuk is, hey guys, it's me, Yosef. Remember, no beard. Now I grew up a little bit. Now I have a beard. Welcome to Egypt. Right? That's the kindergarten pshat. That's not what was going on. That was not the conversation at all. In fact, this initial revelation on Yosef was not something favorable. It wasn't a lashon pius. What does pius mean? Pius means like to appease someone, like to get them like, okay guys, you can chill now. The game is over. We're really brothers. I'm here. That's not what happened. Teidu the achakach b'pasuk hasheni, achar shenivul mipanav, avolam shenis ani Yosef achichem, hiskelam achva shu ro lahem she'oiv osam machashrim lachem. The very next pasuk, after he says, I'm Yosef, my father's still alive, he says, I am Yosef, who brought you to Mitzrayim, who you sold to Mitzrayim, your brother. Right? So he's repeating himself? Not repeating himself. There must have been two different intents. First time he identifies himself as Yosef is one intent. The second time when he identifies himself as Yosef, your brother, so now already he's trying to be friends. But the first time he said, I'm Yosef, he didn't say, I'm your brother Yosef, he said, I'm Yosef. That was not so friendly. Pasuk Rishon, the first pasuk, Lo Omer Lahem Rakan Yosef. He did not make any reference to any friendship, any love, any brotherly companionship. It didn't appease them. When he revealed himself as Yosef, what it did was, it filled him with fear. The person that they've been fighting with this whole time, was trying to get them, with no excuse, Hareo Yosef. It was Yosef who they did something very, very bad to. Vehin ata nafu biyado, and now they fall into his hands. Ubi achol talas lam kirtona, and it's in his power to do something, whatever he wants to do to them. But vagel fiasechel nakomi nakem, and the logical expectation would be he's going to take revenge. Right? Gamaka kishkar ro tov libo alam, and even later when he had already expressed that they were going to get back together again. Umikol makom kishemez Yaakov chazu lahapacha lipachin meno. We see in next week's parsha, Vayechi, after Yaakov dies, suddenly they come to him begging for their lives, because they were worried that maybe after Yaakov's dead, now Yosef is really going to take revenge. And even now, for sure, at the moment, in the heat of the moment, when he says, I'm Yosef, so there was a sudden like wake-up call. Like, it's bad enough that he's been out to get us, but now he's out to get us, and we're in his palace, and he has all of us here together, and he's got one big fat vendetta, you know, and a grudge to hold against us. So that was the initial Ani Yosef. It was, guys, look who you're talking to. I think you owe me one. Rak ha-medrash mefarsh leishu begeder tmiya u'pliya hei hatema. But Omer lahem b'loshon tmiya ani Yosef ha'ur avichai kima tmiya. How did the Beit HaLevi start? It's a question, right? But it's an unnecessary question. He knew the answer. The answer is it was entirely rhetorical. Because what was Yehuda's taina? Yehuda's taina was, you gotta let us bring this binyan back. You gotta let us bring the little kid brother back to Eretz Canaan. Because if we don't, what's gonna happen? Our father's gonna die. In fact, Yosef Akasha knew. What were you guys thinking when you sold me? That never crossed your mind. Ha'or avichai, you got rid of me 22 years ago. Is my father still alive? Yeah, he's still alive. All of a sudden, you're so worried about Binyamin? What's going on? Inconsistent. Full baloney, right? Let's see it inside. Amalam b'lashon tamiya. He asked them with wonder. Ani Yosef, ha'or avichai, kima tamiya. Rhetorically. Ba'omar, ain't he maybe? I don't understand. How could my father still be alive for the last 20 years? Meiro Tzaro, the great pain, that he lost me so many years ago. You know why this was the ultimate Musar, right? That was basically his other kasha. Where's the Musar? He just said, I'm your brother. This was the biggest Musar of all time. Because everything that Yehuda had been saying up until now, in this big showdown, was totally undermined with that one phrase, Ani Yosef, Haor V'Chai. Everything that he had argued was contradicted on the spot. Chol Tanosav Shel Yehuda Hayu Mitzar Shel Yaakov. Yehuda's trying to appeal to the court and saying, oh, my poor father, be sensitive. He's an old man. He's 100-something years old. Shiyugam lo b'chichoso as Binyamin. How much pain are you going to cause me? Take Binyamin. Binyamin. In Kenarei Kasha Lam. So Yosef turns it right back at them and he says, Madu lo chasho ay mitzar shel aviyam u'mach l'yosef. How come you never thought about Yaakov's pain when you sold me? V'gam dim yachal l'chios lo Yosef pain, ye yachal l'chios lo Binyamin. And if he's able to survive without me, he can survive without Binyamin also. V'zeo achrei shegdil ufanam godo rachmanas shel aviyam, after he made such a big deal about the rachmanas for his father, kishiyikach mamena b'no ahuvo, to take his youngest son from him that he loved so much, sidil ha'maisa atzma v'nivu mitochachaso, v'l yachal achav anaslo al tochachaso, when Yosef presented it to them like this, right? So that was the biggest tochacha, that you guys didn't think this out with the same sensitivity when you got rid of me so many years ago. That's why, to answer the question from before, that's why Beis Halevi explains, the Medrash has this long explanation of what's going to happen. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to come with Musar, L'chol Echad Lufi Mashu, each person according to their own situation, according to their own individual circumstances. Dictate of Amar Lufi Mashu. Medrash is careful to use the lesson to say, according to him, according to his circumstances, Gam B'yom Adin, Yeah Tochach L'chol Echad Mimaisav Al Maisav, V'yu Maisav Nitpasam Mimaisav. When we come before HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Hashem's prosecuting attorney has a very simple approach. Chol echad lefi mashehu, what does it mean he's going to give us musar for every person according to who he is? It means Hashem is going to take maisim we did over here and use them as evidence against us over there. Our own actions will be the force against us in proving our guilt. Because Hashem will be able to demonstrate that people live internal contradictions. People live lies. And that's what Yehuda was taught. That's what the brothers were taught when Yosef demonstrated this thing. Why? He says, "Akol avin v'chet b'fnei atzmo, sover adam sheish lo k'tas teretz." For every individual aver that a person does, I'm at the very bottom of the first page, every individual aver a person does, he's got a teretz. He has a way to justify it. He has a way to explain it. They're kol derech ish yashav einav. Everyone sees what they do as right and okay. Ulmashal, Misha eino no sein tzedakah. Let's say a person doesn't give so much tzedakah. Sover b'dayto sheyesh lo teretz. Kovin v'docha panasa rivo itzacha shalach reichos b'nei beso. So he has a, he can for effort, he can give an answer. He says, I have this expense and that expense, and I have to support my family, so many things I have to spend money on. I need a vacation in warm weather. I need a vacation in tropical weather. I need a vacation in tropical weather on the beach. Atche ein b'kokh lefazer al-chayim. Until he has no money left that he can say I can spend it on other people. Even though that's not really a good answer, Moshe Amram Masechus Gittin, Emro Adam Shemazanosam Mitzumtzamim Yasim and Tzedakah. Afilu Ani Am Efrates Ben Tzedakah Yasim Tzedakah. Even a person who's an Ani who's being supported by others still has to give Tzedakah. Mikol Makom Tzas Teretz V'Dichlihu Darei Eino L'Damos Onesha Asher Akopas Yadam Tzedakah L'Onesha Megiya La'Ani She'Inu Nosin Tzedakah. So it's a Teretz. It's not a great Teretz, but it's a Teretz. Im Kim B'Teretz Zehara Yukal Onesha Harbe. I said, I had to pay for this, I had to pay for that, I had to pay for the food, I had to pay for the car, I had to pay for the house, I had to pay for this expense, that expense. The brother says, okay, I get it. You had other responsibilities. You didn't have money left over to give to poor people. And then he'll take him to the mall. He'll say, ever see that store before? Looks familiar. It's called Banana Republic. Oh, Banana Republic. Yeah, I've been there. Tell me, how much does a pair of pants cost? $85 for a pair of pants? Oh, $85.
It's a lot of money for a pair of pants. So, what's that? Marshalls, you get a pair of pants for $29.99. $15. Okay. So he says, you had the money for the luxury items. You had the money for the things that are not totally necessary. The things that are above and beyond what, come on, you really have an excuse for. You went on a crazy vacation. The Beis Halevi uses more stark examples also. Maybe you bought something that was awesome. Maybe you spent money on a taiva that was awesome. Maybe you spent so much money on your kids' education to teach them things that are against Torah. Or you spent money for machlokas. Yeah? You knew that if you would
Stop recording.
You were able to spend a lot of money on your cupboard. You were able to you know when your neighbor bought a Lexus, and your Chrysler minivan was running just fine, and it was getting where you needed to go, and even did well in the snow. You didn't need that SUV, right? So, but instead you traded in and spent another $50,000 just because, come on, I'm going to pull up to carpool, you know, with my soccer mom car, and he's going to pull up to carpool with his fancy SUV. Like, come on, like, my neighbor, I got to keep up with the Joneses, right? So Kosher Baruch is going to say, I know what you spent the money on. I know what you needed. I know what you didn't need. And if you gave tzedakah also, okay, so then we have something to talk about. But to use the excuse that you didn't have the money, the funds were not available to you, so stop. And what were you thinking when you spent the money on something you didn't have to spend the money on? Yehuda, you sold your brother. What were you thinking? Thinking about your father? Suddenly you think about your father when it comes to Binyamin. How come you weren't thinking about your father when it comes to Yosef? Well, what's going on? You stuck up for your brother then. How come you don't stick up for your brother when you're talking about Yosef 22 years ago? That's what it means. There's din and there's tochacha. They're two different things. But the word is that our own actions reveal whether we're sincere or not sincere. And a person has to be able to evaluate if you're able to justify an avera. Are you really able to justify an avera? Or is the justification something that maybe makes sense in a vacuum over here? In with the tunnel vision, without thinking about the big picture of your life as a whole. A person has to live a life that doesn't just take action by action by action, but you know, the mashal is given. Maybe we spoke about this once. Why is it that on Rosh Hashanah, we want to be marbe zechuyos kerimon? We want to be marbe zechuyos kerimon. Rimon has 613 seeds, or 168, however many it has, but there's a lot of them, right? So we say, you don't want to be like a pomegranate. But there's a Gemara, based on a pasuk in Shir Shirim, Kefela harimon rakosech, afilu harikonim shebucha, maleim mitzvos karimon. Gemara says that even the empty ones of Klal Yisrael are as full of mitzvos as a rimon. In other words, the pasukim praise Klal Yisrael that even the people who are not the highest level, So they do mitzvahs. They do mitzvahs. So I understand. I want to be like a Rimon. I don't want to be like a Rimon. Is a positive thing? Is a negative thing? So quantitatively, it's a good idea to be like a Rimon. Do a lot of mitzvahs. Qualitatively, it's not a good idea to be like a Rimon. Why? What's unique about a Rimon, if you slice it in half, as opposed to if you slice an apple in half, right? When you slice an apple in half, what do you see? You see a few seeds in the middle, but the entire flesh is the fruit that you eat. That's sweet. If you slice a pomegranate in half, right, it may also be primarily fruit, but it's not one unified entity, like an apple is, right? The fruit of a rima is different than the fruit of an apple. Fruit of an apple is one goof, the flesh of the fruit, whereas the rimon is many, many, many different little pieces. The difference between one and the other is that you want to do a lot of mitzvos like a rimon has seeds, but you want your seeds, you want your mitzvos to fuse into a wholesome personality, and to be a person whose ideals and values define who you are, not just I did this, check it off, go do something else, check that off, go do something else, check that off. No, it has to transform me into an entirely different person. A person who's kadosh, a person who is devoted to Torah mitzvahs, that really guides me every step of the way. So if you look at every action bit by bit, so maybe you can justify this, justify that. Look at the big picture. Sometimes we're inconsistent. And that's what Yosef was saying to you. So there was no answer to this question. And yes, he knew the answer that Yaakov was still alive. He wasn't asking if Yaakov was alive. He was asking this rhetorical question, if their arguments were consistent. Just to add a knetch to this from Sichas Moser. In this week's parsha, Chaim Shmuel Levitz, if you want to look on page Tavi Tess and Kuf, he has a similar idea, quotes a similar line of thinking in the Midrashim, as we found in the Beis Halevi, but he has a slightly different twist, where he says that what real tochacha is, right, we think about tochacha is like some guy getting in the Beis Medrash, yelling, and making me feel bad, making me feel guilty. That's not really what Musar is. Musar is presenting the emes in a way that you can't deny it. Tochacha is showing a person to their face what they really get anyway, and what they understand on their own. Just have a yitzhahar sometimes that overcomes our ability to act on it. But tochacha and musar is just presenting the emes and being able to accept the emes on the other side of the table. And that's what Yosef was doing also. The reason why there's tochacha here, even though he doesn't say shame on you for selling me, it's tochacha in the sense that there's just emes that's being presented. So Rechaim Shalom says as follows. It says, a person knows that, okay, maybe not everything that I do is right, but he has some sort of end game. The ends, things justify the means. If I cut some corners now and I get the right job that I'm hoping for, because my grades are a little better in college, even though I had to use not the best methods, but okay, you know, Mr. Shem, when I make my first couple millions, so then, you know, I'll be able to give a lot to the shul, and to the school, and to the yeshiva, and to my Rebbe's tzedakah collections, you know. Mr. Shem, a main on the contributions, not a main on the cutting the corners, okay? The Rebbeim received an email that we should be extra careful about cheating, because the college is doubling their efforts on integrity during finals, and integrity in Torah final should be no less rigorous than it is in the afternoon.
Don't cheat.
Thank you. So a person comes up with all kinds of justifications, and he says, okay, the ends are going to justify the means. And in his mind, whatever is going to result is a matir for the things that he's doing right now. What happens to that guy? Doesn't make his millions. What happens if that guy graduated 3 years ago from YU and he still hasn't found a job because whatever reason? Okay, Masha Nishalohu Maisa Bovad. So the only thing that's left is a Maisa. The only thing that's left is reality, the fact that I did this Avera. A Maisa Sher Avodaito in a Hog Vein Royhu. An action which he himself admits was not the right thing to do. Lo Asa Ella Beglal HaTachas HaNitzis. He was doing it because he thought, hey, well, it's like, I'm in control of my destiny. I know what job I'm going to get. I know how much money I'm going to earn. I know that I know who I'm going to marry, and I know when it's going to happen. And you know, people nowadays, they plan out their entire life. You know, from the moment they enter kindergarten, you know, and they're going to get into this school and this yeshiva and this college and get this job, this internship, summers in between. And then Baruch Hu says, you know, sorry, I'm the one who plans. You know, and sometimes we need to be reminded who's really making the who's pulling the strings. Bring it back to this week's parsha. So Chaim Shmuel explains, why did they sell Yosef? How did this whole conflict start? Because Yosef's going around telling these dreams, making everybody feel that he's looking down on them, he's going to be the king, everyone's going to bow to him, right? So why did they respond this way? What incited them to kill him, almost kill him, sell him? They want to be Mavata B'Cholomos. Even they realize that it's not Stam. Not Stam that he had these dreams. And, you know, we're talking about the families of the Avos. Nothing happened by accident. Their father had a history of dreams. Yeah, it wasn't Stam. But they said, we're going to be Mavata B'Cholomos, right? That's exactly what they say. As soon as Yosef approaches them, they say, behold, look at that. Look who's coming over there. It's the dreamer. Right? And what does the Pasuk say? V'nire ma yu b'Cholomos. Let's see what's going to happen with all those dreams. Let's see if those dreams are really going to come true. And they said, we'll show you. You know what Rashi says on that Pasuk? Rashi says in that pasuk, "V'nira ma'yu uchol mosav." It's not the brother speaking; it's Hashem speaking. Hashem says, You guys think you're going to be Bavakal Cholmos. We'll see. We'll see what's really going to happen. I gave those Cholmos for a reason. They're going to come true. You know what the ultimate tochacha for the brothers was? They sold him to get him off, to get rid of him. What happened? He ends up in Mitzrayim, and they're bound with him, and they themselves are fulfilling the dreams that they were trying to be mevatel. So what were they left with? They thought, it's kedai for us to be mevatel the dream. So we're going to have to do something horrific in order to get to that point. What happened? The dreams were fulfilled, and they're left with the aver of selling him. And that is the again, the presentation of MS right in front of you. That I thought I could justify it, but all I'm left with is the bare fact that I violated the Ratzon Hashem and I did something terrible. That is the strongest tochacha that a person can experience when right in front of their eyes they realize that that all they're left with was a mistake. It's a scary thought.
The question is, do they have a choice to go? A realistic choice.
Good question. Not for that. A little more parsha, Bosai, or yeah, a little parsha. Okay, yeah.
Can I say
Shalom parsha? Let me share one more board. We'll leave a few more minutes to get one.
What's the
of near Mayuchal Masav. It's a Parak Lam Zayin Pasukhov. Okay. I wanna try to get something in Leslie's parsha. When we're told of the sons born to Yosef in Mitzrayim, Ephraim and Manasseh, each one has a reason why their names are given. Okay, anyone know? Parak Mem Aleph Pasuk Nun Aleph. A Yikri Yosef Hashem Abuchor Menashe, Kinashani Elokim is called Malives Kol Beis Avi, Hashem Hashani Kor Ephraim, Ki Ephraim Elokim Ve'eretzoni. Let's start with the second one. So Ephraim Elokim Ve'eretzoni. It says over here in the English. Second one, he called Ephraim, God has made me fruitful in the land of my suffering. Okay? Hashem gave me children, even in this terrible exile that I'm experiencing. What about the first name? Kinashani Elokim Eskol Amaliv Eskol Beis Avi. Explains Yosef. Why do you call him Menashe? God has made me forget all my hardship and all my father's household. Very interesting juxtaposition of those two reasons. I understand that now he's on top and he's doing great. He's not in jail and he's not a slave anymore. So Nashani Elokim Eskol Amaliv. Hashem made me forget all my history, all the bad times, all the sufferings I went through. But Hashem made me forget my father's household? That doesn't sound like a good thing, right? If anything, it was remembering Yaakov that got him through to this point, right? What was the one thing that saved him from the Aveira Potiphar? He had this image in his head how can I violate the legacy of my father? A couple years ago, Judah was here, spoke to BMP, I think it was Parshas by Yeshiv, and he said a shot from the Ishbitzer on that Pasuk. It says in the Pasuk that he saw the most Yukno Shal Aviv. He saw an image of his father. So Pasuk is he saw Yaakov. So the Chassidus Taich, another beautiful pshat. He said he saw an image of himself as a father. Demus diukno shel aviv. He saw the image of himself as a father, and he said to himself, "This is what I'm going to do. This is what I'm going to have on my track record. This is what I'm going to have under my belt in my history. When it comes time for me to raise a family, and I'm going to have to be a role model, and I'm going to have to be an example for how a Jew acts and how a Jew fights the Yitzhar and how a Jew fulfills Ratzon Hashem, even in a situation of Nisayon, and this is the image that I'm going to portray for my children." And that kept him away. That is a very powerful word. Very powerful word. I told you this once. You know, when I was giving those beginner shiurim in the city, one of the biggest motivating factors that the rabbi got the Baal Batim, 40 years old, never learned Gemara before, to come, said, "Your kids are going to come home in a couple of years with Gemara homework, and you're not going to be able to help them? They're going to come and say, 'No, sorry, I can't help you. Ask somebody else.'" Every parent wants to help his children with their homework. Every parent wants to be there for his kids, help them through school. Right? A person has to think, what I do now. Yeah, they asked a different version of the story. I think the way I heard it was they asked Rav Shamshon Fol Hirsch, when does a person have to start thinking about chinuch? 3 years old, 4 years old, 5 years old, you know, we have to take these things seriously. He said 20 years ago, 20 years before your kids are born, that's when you need to start thinking about chinuch. Because you're developing yourself. It's developing yourself to be able to implement anything positive when you're educating your children. Because like we said so many times in the past, the number one most effective and, whether you like it or not, method of teaching that's going to happen in your home is the example that you provide for your kids. So you have to spend 20 years growing and developing to get to that point. So Yosef said, I'm going to have this on my this black spot on my reputation. I can't go through with this. That's what saved him. So what does it mean, Nashani Elokim is called Malivas Kol Beisavi? How does it mean I'm going to forget my father? So I saw a word a couple years ago. Sefer Chidushe Reb Yosef Nechemia Kornitzer. Yosef Nechemia was the last Rav of Warsaw before World War II, before the Jewish community was destroyed, the Warsaw Ghetto. That will be relevant in a few minutes. He was the last Rav before Warsaw Jewish community was destroyed by the Nazis. He said like this. I'll start with a mushel. It's my own mushel. Anyone ever buy an electric shaver before? Right? So there's two types of electric shavers. And you don't always know which one you got until you buy it. It's chargeable, right? That's the word. It's a travel shaver. So there's some that you plug it in, you charge it, you unplug it, and it works. But there's others that you plug it in, but it will not work so long as it's plugged in. It only works once it's charged. Anything, you know what I'm talking about? Anyone ever buy one of those and like, what good is this? Like, my charger is dead now, and my shaver is done now, and it's Erev Shabbos, I need to shave now, you're going to make me wait 3 hours till it charges, disconnected from the, right? It's terrible, right? Okay, I'm glad I'm not the only person who made this mistake.
Keep plugging it in, your shaver.
Okay. Okay, so that is like the official worst part about shaving. That was the Nisayon. When Kadosh Baruch Hu said you can't shave with a razor, you have to use an electric shaver. That was the Nisayon that he had in mind, Mustafa, in 2017. Okay? Hachana, right? Hachana. Hachana Shabbos, correct? Okay? Correct? Correct? So I always thought that's a mushel. It's a mushel for example, a guy coming back from Eretz Yisrael. I come back from Eretz Yisrael, so he had an amazing experience in Israel, in yeshiva, especially. He's coming back in January. January is a little bit different experience coming back in January. January, you're coming back, you're still plugged into the wall. You still have that connection, right? And you feel like, okay, I'm just going to keep going. And I'm going to still feed off of the juice that I'm pulling from the outlet of the Holy Land, and that experience of the Holy Land. But then, when you actually come back to America and you've got to turn it on, you realize it doesn't work as long as you're plugged in. Right? If you're... What's that?
It's different plug.
Write that one down. It's a different plug. Right? I'm in America. The outlet... It's not the same outlet. Beautiful. If a person doesn't know how to take that charge and fill up the battery and exist on his own, unplugged... I have guys, I remember when I was... Yeah, like. Years after the lefties, I would say, who's your Rebbe? And they would tell me the name of Rebbe, who, like 6 years ago in Shalvim, that maybe once a year before Rosh Hashanah, he gives him a call, you know, like to see how he's doing, and like the Rebbe has like 3 seconds to talk to him, because every other alumni of the yeshiva from the last 30 years is calling him also right before Rosh Hashanah. Like, Baruch Hashem, we have time in Eretz Yisrael. It really defines us. It makes us who we are, and really has the power to change a person and set them on the path for the rest of life. But you also have to realize that if you're not there, you need to be feeding off of a different source of inspiration. You need to be more actively engaged with other sources of inspiration. Again, Chazdram, not to throw that out the window. It's very powerful. And the charge will stay. But if you think that you're going to keep going plugged in, that's not going to work. You have to be confident that you're charged and that your battery is full. But then you need to disconnect from the wall and go. And then, when you're in America, you have to find new places to recharge also. But so long as a person thinks that my life force is connected somewhere else, there's only so long that can take you, and it may not really be effective at all because you're in a new set of circumstances. Yosef was afraid of that electric shaver phenomenon. There was no Jews. He was all by himself. There was no minyan. There was no shir and yeshiva to go to. There was mamish, nothing. And he was in a place filled with avodah zarah, filled with gilui raos. He had nothing that he could point to and hold on to as a remnant of his Yiddishkeit, except his memories of back home, Beis Avi, Yaakov and the brothers, and the Yiddishkeit he had back in Eretz Yisrael. He had nothing. And he knew that as long as he was feeding off of the Tumas Yuchnel Shel Ovid, it could get him through a few, like Ephraim said, I can shave a little bit, and then plug it in again, shave it in a little, it'll get me going for 10 seconds here, 10 seconds there, it'll get me through Eishes Potifar, but long term, it's not a solution. Long term, is not a solution. So what he said over here, he named Ephraim that Nashan Elkim is calling Olivas called Beis Avi. Now that I'm starting a family, now that I have a new nuclear
formation, which will be the bedrock of a developing Jewish legacy in my homeland, which is now my homeland, in Mitzrayim, now there's hope. Now I have the ability not to forget about Yaakov, that's all the past, and I'm going to leave that there, chas v'shalom. I can still keep that as the image of what I want to be working towards and what the experience that got me going, but I don't need to rely on that. I don't need to hope that my Yiddishkeit is dependent on something that's distant from me. Now that I'm beginning a future here in Mitzrayim, now that there's something to look forward to going forward, so now there's new hope. And now I can build my emunah and I can strengthen my Yiddishkeit with the focus on what's beginning to form with my family here in Mitzrayim. And the lesson for us is clear. The lesson for us is very clear. But I think that even more so, where it came from is very powerful. Who said this for? Who said this for? This was Rabbi Yosef Nechemia. He was watching a generation in fear, being locked up, being deported. This was after the Nazis were already in power. And everyone knew that it was only a matter of time till the European community would vanish. And unfortunately, a lot of people who were living in that reality thought that, okay, so like, yeah, that's the end. What we're watching around us, what we're witnessing around us, is a microcosm for Yiddishkeit forever. Right? It's sort of like when Hashem destroyed Sodom, so the daughters of Lot thought, like, well, they were destroyed, that means, like, the whole world, there's nothing else, there is no one else, right? So they watch the world crumbling around them. It takes someone very unique to be able to have a vision that, no, there's going to be a time where we're not going to still be living off of what Europe and the Jewish community in Europe is right now, but there's going to be a future of Klal Yisrael. There's going to be a new beginning in Eretz Yisrael. There's going to be a new beginning in America. There's going to be a new beginning other places around the globe that will not be contingent on their connection and their roots back in Europe, but we'll start new communities and we'll start a new future for Klal Yisrael in the same way that Yosef himself did that in Mitzrayim. A very powerful thought of just the hope and the inspiration that the neshama of a Jew has. I think that the other person who historically represented that was the Eish Kodesh. Eish Kodesh was operated, so to speak, as a Rebbe in the Warsaw Ghetto, in hiding, in basements of people's houses. And he said a word which is very similar to something Jesse said at the Chagiga last week. He said that, you know, everyone knows that that Yom Kippur is like Purim. It's Yom Kippur. So many explanations of where that comparison lies. But it comes from the Rizal. So he said, Mamash, in the middle of the Holocaust, you know what he said? He said, in the same way that on Yom Kippur you have to fast unless it's Mamash Pikuach Nefesh, on Purim you have to be the Simcha, Mamash, unless it's Pikuach Nefesh. In the ghetto, in the middle of the destruction of Europe, that was the hope he had. He could only have such a hope if he believed that there was going to be rebuilding somehow later. Whatever the past was going to be gone, but there'll be a new rebuilding. And how fitting was it that it was only many years later they dug up his svarim. The svarim that we have from the Eish Kodesh were found buried in a basement somewhere in Poland. And there was that disconnect. When he died, when he was killed in the Holocaust, people thought that was it. And later they found that even disconnected from that plug, from Europe, he had already set set in motion, planted the seeds for the rebuilding that would take place afterwards. So in our own personal avodah, whether you're in yeshiva now, it's a different place than Eretz Yisrael. And when you leave yeshiva, and when you're at that next stage in life, you also have to establish your connections and your sources of inspiration, and you can't always rely on what you had in the past, but you have to find new ways to renew that inspiration, a new context, and a new new environment. A wonderful Shabbos.